The Random Jottings of Hinge and Brackett with Dr. Evadne Hinge and Dame Hilda Brackett. With Jean Haywood as Maud and friends and neighbors at Stacton Trestle in a hive of activity.
Evadne can be excited by the most curious things. For instance, you should have seen her the time she found the fungoid growth on the apple tree. Well, it kept her happy for weeks. Every time I saw her, she had a bucket of something nasty in one hand and a squirter in the other. But I've never seen her more excited than she was when she came running in from the garden one afternoon during the early part of last summer. Hilda, guess what's just happened to me? I haven't the foggiest notion there, but you look so flushed that if I didn't know you, I might think it was something interesting. Why is your dress all covered in bits of grass? I had to throw myself on the ground to avoid them. Oh, don't tell me those children from up the road have been sitting on the back wall again stoning you. No, Hilda. It was bees. Bees? You know, dear. Buff, 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 honeybee, honeybee. I know perfectly well what a bee is, Evadne. I have been in the garden myself when there have been bees about. But I've never had to throw myself on the ground on account of them. You must have upset them. I told you about poking around in nooks and crannies with that stick of yours. I was not poking around in nooks and crannies. I was mowing the lawn. And suddenly, I heard this loud humming noise, and I looked up. And there was a swarm of bees coming straight towards me.
And you panicked.
I did not panic.
Then why did you throw yourself to the ground?
Oh, I know we all used to do it at one time there, but that was for flying bombs. Not just for a handful of bees.
It was not just a handful of bees, Hilda. I told you, it was a swarm. The whole sky darkened as they flew across the sun.
Really, Evadne, you make it sound like a 1,000 bomber raid over Berlin. You're sure it wasn't vultures? Now, I could understand vultures going for you.
Well, if you're not afraid of bees, Hilda, come out and have a look at them.
They're not still there, are they?
Well, of course they're still there.
Where?
Well, they went into that old hive down by the hollyhocks.
But that's where my garden seat is, Evadne. That's where I sit and watch the birds.
Well, now you can sit and watch the birds and the bees. You never know, perhaps you'll learn something.
Look who's talking. Anyway, how long are those wretched bees going to be there?
Probably for good.
For good? Surely they could have found somewhere more salubrious than the old hive. It was there when we arrived. We were going to burn it, if I remember correctly.
Yes, you were.
I wish we had. I don't want to have to sit out there all summer covered from head to foot in netting.
Don't be ridiculous, Hilda. One only wears protective clothing when one is getting the honey out.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. You mean we're going to get honey?
Well, what did you expect from bees? Cranberry jelly. And you know, they really couldn't have arrived at a better time.
Oh. Is 2:30 in the afternoon especially propitious?
No. There's an old country rhyme, Hilda. A swarm in May is worth a load of hay. A swarm in June is worth a silver spoon. But a swarm in July is not worth a fly.
You know that, Ned. When I listen to you like that, I sometimes wish you hadn't lined your drawers with the Farmer's Weekly.
They have arrived at the most productive time of year, Hilda. June.
How much honey would we get then?
Well, I believe you can get something like 40 pounds from one hive.
Good heavens. And they sell local honey in the health shop for £1.50 a pound.
Mm.
We could make £60 a hive.
How many hives do you think we could cram in down there if we burnt that old garden seat of mine?
Now, steady on, Hilda. Before we go into mass production, we'll need to go into this business thoroughly and find out how we do it first.
You know what, dear? We can have a little stall down by the front gate.
Yes. You'll need somewhere to sit, won't you, once we've burned your garden seat?
We could sell all sorts of goodies. Honey ginger snaps and honey cake and honey fudge. But we need a trade name, don't we? Now listen, what about Dame Hilda's homemade honey products?
Well, how about Dr. Hinge's homemade honey products?
Oh, no, the clinical there. No. I mean, Dr. Hinge sounds like a quack. Suppose we named it after the house. Homemade honey products from Utopia Limited. And had a smiling bee on the label.
Why would the bee have to be smiling?
Well, because it comes from Utopia, dear. It's a happy little bee. We can have it sitting on a cornucopia, and underneath it there's lovely lines of W.S. Gilbert's. Quaff the nectar, cull the roses, gather fruit and flowers in plenty.
Bees don't gather fruit and flowers.
No, but they quaff the nectar.
They don't cull the roses either. That's only one out of four.
Yes, but the lines are from the opera Utopia Limited.
Well, who's going to know that?
Anyone who is familiar with the works of Gilbert and Sullivan.
Now, you're aiming for a specialized market, are you?
If you are going to make an issue of this, Evadne, we can explain on the label where the lines come from.
You're going to need big labels, aren't you? And what are you going to sell it in? 5-pound jars.
Quaff the nectar. Cull the roses. Bashful girls will soon be plenty. Maid who thus at 15 poses ought to be divine at 20.
Do you want that on as well?
Those are the lines the chorus sing immediately after Lady Sophie's song in Act One. Remember?
I remember.
Why don't you see if you can find Lady Sophie's song, will you, dear?
Very well.
Of course, it's an absolute age since we did that one, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but I've got the score here somewhere.
Well, I say, Evadne, there is a honey drink you can make as well, isn't there?
Yes, lemon and honey.
No, dear, no. Something a little more exotic than lemon and honey.
Mead.
No, the stuff that the gods drank.
Nectar.
Ambrosia.
No, they ate ambrosia, dear. They drank nectar.
Or was it the other way around?
It might have been.
Well, whatever it was honey of some sort, wasn't it? And it made them immortal. So we could put that on the label, couldn't we? Pure goodness from the honeybee to give you immortality.
I rather fancy the trade's description people may have something to say about that.
Well, if they doubt it, I shall point to you. You look as though you've lived forever.
Hilda, do you want to sing this song or not?
Yes, I do.
Then make a beeline for the piano and sing.
Bull-faced ranger, perfect stranger, meets two well-behaved ladies. He's attractive, young and active, each a little bit persuaded. Youth advances, and advances, to the danger they awaken. David tells him, and he tells him, he is very much mistaken, very, very much mistaken. Now they speak to him politely, please observe their staring slightly, just to show he's acting vainly. This is what you're saying plainly, no way on a bet law, we are not what you take us for. Well, on a rescue party, English natives constant, go away, don't let the war be arm or claw, you take us for. Well, on a rescue party, let's see, English natives constant. in for conversation. Makes excuses. This produces interesting agitation. He with daring, undespairing, gives his heart his ring. This loses. This proceeding. This proceeding. They turn up their little noses. Yes, their little, little noses. When a father's blessing rightful, when a man of rank and title, his position first discloses, always pluck your little noses. When a bird before the cross, why this in for looking at the law?
Say, Abney, you played that with remarkable panache. Quite the bee's knees, dear.
Thank you, dear.
Oh, that sounds like Maud back with the shopping.
I think we'd better warn her about the bees, Hilda.
How nice of you to think of her, dear.
I wasn't thinking of her. My concern was for the bees. I suggest we place that hive out of bounds to her.
Yes, perhaps you're right, dear. Maud!
Come in, Dame Elder.
I'll tell her, dear. I don't want her to be upset.
Yes, Dame Elder.
Ah, now, Maud, dear. You know that beehive in the garden down by the hollyhocks near my seat?
Yes, Dame Elder.
Well, the doctor tells me it's full of bees.
Does she know? Well, I don't know what she's been insinuating, but I'll not have that laid at my door.
I wasn't trying to lay it at anyone's door, Maud. They arrived in a swarm a short while ago and occupied the old hive.
Oh, did they, Doctor? Then I hope you ain't looking to me to go down and smoke them out.
Oh, we don't want them smoked out, dear.
We're just trying to warn you not to interfere with them.
Do I look like an half-wit, Doctor?
Don't answer that, Evadne.
Do I look the sort of person who'd be daft enough to go interfering with a hive full of bees?
Don't answer that either, Evadne.
Well, do I?
Of course you don't, Maud. Evadne, stop biting your lip, dear. It's gone all white. No, Maud, we just wanted to warn you that they were there, dear. That's all.
We're going to keep them, you see, and possibly breed them. And eventually fill that whole area of the garden with hives.
And who's going to hang your washing out then, Doctor?
My washing?
Certainly ain't going to be me. Not if there's bees about. Them sort of things don't take to me.
I wonder why.
Nor I to them. Bees and wasps, they's all the same. I had my education almost ruined by a wasp.
You intrigue me there. What did it do?
It stung old Birdie Finch, that's what.
And who was Birdie Finch?
She were my teacher at the old village school, Dame Elder. Her name was Miss Finch. But we all called her Birdie.
Now, very original.
Anyhow, we was all in class one morning, and old Birdie Finch was standing on her little platform, writing fractions on her blackboard, when I see this wasp hovering over her head. There's a wasp, I shouts. Well, you should have seen her jump. Who shouted that about a wasp, says Birdie. I did, says I. Then where is it, says she. I don't know, says I. You're a liar, says she. I ain't, says I. And I chucks me inkwell at her.
Talk about Tom Brown's school days.
Well, she ducks, and it sails right out through the open window beside her. And you know, that daft old headmaster of ours chooses that very moment to go wandering by that window.
It makes you wonder how they get their degrees, doesn't it?
You should have seen his face. Well, I'd only just filled them inkwells. The headmaster comes storming in and he says, who threw that inkwell out the window? The whole class points at me and shouts, Shaden.
You must have been popular.
I were. They was just waiting to see me kick him.
Were you in the habit of kicking the head then, dear?
I done it afore, when he come too close. But I didn't get no chance this time, because just as I were raising me boot, Birdie Finch finds that wasp.
Where was it?
Up her skirt. Well, she shrieks and goes all rigid. So the headmaster goes to get it out. Talk about a pantomime. He might have been a BA and an MA and all, but he'd lots to learn about women and wasps. And the upshot was, it stung her. And she gave a shriek, and she kicks him instead of me.
Well, it certainly sounds like a lively morning there, but I don't see how that ruined your education.
I ain't no good at adding up, am I?
Well, not much, dear Nick.
And you blame it on that wasp, do you?
Well, it were that wasp has interrupted that maths lesson.
How lucky it didn't happen during an English lesson.
I say, who can that be?
I'll go.
Thank you, now. I say, Dadney, I do hope Maud's not going to be silly about those bees.
How do you mean, dear?
Well, if she won't hang the washing out, what else is she going to be unable to do on their account?
Who knows? But they do say bees are lucky. They may stop her coming altogether.
If Abney, not so loud, dear.
Excuse me, Dame Mulder.
Yes, dear, who was it?
It's him as his caretaker at the co-op hall, Dame Mulder. He's come about them bees.
Oh, they're not complaining already, are they? Does he look as if he's been stung?
He looks as if he's frightened of being. He's wearing big leather gloves and he's holding a wicker basket in one hand and an hat with a veil on it in t'other.
Well, perhaps he's going to a wedding, dear.
He's obviously a beekeeper, Hilda. Now, this could prove fortuitous. We could do with a few tips. Now, show him in, will you, please, Maud?
And then make us all a nice pot of tea there, would you?
Very well, Dame Elder. You can go along in, then. They'll see you.
Just listen to her, Hilda. The epitome of graciousness.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh, I don't suppose you remember me. The name's Rampling.
I remember perfectly well, Mr. Rampling. We once had a slight disagreement over whether or not 440-watt bulbs were adequate to light the co-op hall for a Christmas dance.
Yeah. You wanted 60-watt, didn't you? And a string of Chinese lanterns.
I'm afraid, Mr. Rampling, that Dame Hilda occasionally suffers from delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, and what was the upshot? You fused the place. I warned you about that. That wiring will only take 440s, that is, if you want both bars of the fire on as well.
Anyway, what brings you here today, Mr. Rampling?
I've come for the bees.
What bees?
My bees, that are in your hive.
Well, how do you know they're your bees?
Because I saw them swarm and I followed them here. They went down my garden, along Culpeper Lane, across the allotments, over the railway, down the field behind the Wesleyan Chapel, and into your garden and hive. I climbed on the garden wall and had a look. Wasn't very easy with my leg.
What's the matter with your leg?
Why, it's just an old war wound, you know. Shrapnel. At one stage of the desert campaign, I were the only thing that stood between Rommel and Cairo. Me on me motorbike and out to patrol. Mercifully, he didn't know that, or he'd have been through in a flash, I shouldn't wonder.
Get back to the bees, Mr. Rambling.
Rampling.
What is the legal position of that?
The legal position is quite clear, Hilda. They're ours. The law on the subject hasn't been changed since Roman times.
She would know that, of course.
No. Wait a minute. I kept those bees in sight all the way here. They're mine.
Then why has it taken you so long to come and tell us? If you were on top of the garden wall, as you say, you could have shouted.
Yes, you could have shouted at me. I was in the garden at the time.
Oh, don't confuse the issue, dear. You were lying on the grass. If he saw you, he'd probably have thought that it was our scarecrow that had blown over.
I didn't see anyone. And I didn't think I'd ever would bother either. So I went home to fetch a skep and the rest of my things before disturbing you.
And that's where you made your big mistake, Mr. Rampling. You should have left your shovel on the wall.
What did you say, no?
There's country law, Hilda.
Yeah.
Mr. Rampling, are you cognizant with Flora Thompson's book, Lark Rise to Candleford?
Lark Rise to what?
Candleford.
No, I can't say I am. I'm not a great reader of my eyes, you know, they're not up to it anymore. The effects of the blazing sun on the desert sand.
Yes.
Standing there day after day, staring towards the horizon, looking for them Germans to come in.
Yes, but I mean, what a pity you didn't have Lark Rise to Candleford with you. You could have read it while you were waiting.
You see, Mr. Rampling, according to Flora Thompson, as soon as one sees one's bees swarming, one grabs a coal shovel and an iron spoon, and one follows them all the way, banging the spoon on the shovel and shouting, tang, tang, tangity tang, to let people know they're yours.
You know, I'm sure there's a dash of Romany blood in you somewhere.
Then, having seen where one's bees have gone, one leaves one's shovel to mark one's claim.
There you are then, Mr. Rampling. You appear to have forfeited your claim. We found no coal shovel on our wall.
Well, if you ladies are so set on having those bees, you'd better keep them, I suppose. I just hope you knows what you're doing, that's all. They could be killer bees, for all you know.
Killer bees? What are killer bees?
Well, some farmers use them instead of barbed wire for keeping nosy people off of their land. You go do that, they'll sting you to death.
Perhaps we should let him remove them if that may be, just in case.
Nonsense, Hilda. He's only trying to frighten us.
Well, please yourselves, but don't say I didn't warn you. I must say, you surprise me, you two. I mean, I've always thought you were something odd about you. I'd have put you down for eccentrics, or cranks, or even nutters. But I'd never have put you down for beefy.
Well, after a few harsh words said on both sides, we offered to pay Mr. Rampling for the bees. But he said trading bees for money was unlucky. So, finally, he went off with 12 jars of Evadne's homemade quince jelly. And he seemed quite happy. Mind, for the first few days, I was very wary of those bees. But after a while, I grew quite brave. I actually began talking to them. Well, you see, I read somewhere. You should tell them all the household gossip. So every time I passed the hive, I stopped and told them something. I bet Evadne's ears were burning. Then, one afternoon, I discovered that disaster had struck, and I hurried into the drawing room to tell Evadne. Evadne, Evadne, the bees are doing something funny there.
Now, you haven't been down there singing to them, have you?
I just went down to tell them what we had for lunch.
That must be a dozen times you've been down there so far today.
Well, I've had a lot to tell them, dear. First, there was my funny dream. Then there was the heel coming off my shoe. There was you getting a rotten egg at breakfast.
Don't go on. So, what are they doing that's funny?
I think they're swarming again or something. They're all in a sort of mass on a branch of the apple tree.
All of them?
Well, I didn't actually count them individually. But it looks like all of them to me.
Well, in that case, they're not swarming. They're absconding.
Absconding? They're not school children.
Going, all of them. Leaving us. They'll stay on the tree long enough for the scouts to find them a new home, and then they'll be off. And bang goes your honey store.
But why should they want to go off and leave us?
Well, when bees desert the hive, it can be for one of several reasons, Hilda. There may be a lack of food or water.
Oh, nonsense. They've been living like kings. Or, should I say, queens.
Yeah. Or it could be due to excessive interference by the beekeeper. Or someone.
What are you looking at me for?
Well, I must say, I would abscond if every half hour someone in a straw hat and ostrich feather came tapping on my roof to tell me a lot of trivial nonsense about rotten eggs and shoe heels.
They're supposed to like being talked to.
Maybe. But perhaps they don't enjoy being nattered at.
I do not natter it at me.
Now, the immediate problem, Hilda, is to get them off their tree and back into the hive. You'll need a box or a basket and a soft brush.
What are you going to do with them, dear?
Brush them off the branch of the tree into this box, of course.
But they're up the tree, Evadne.
Then I shall take the stepladder. And I can use your ostrich feather instead of a brush. They're about 60 foot up it, dear. I mean, even with your peculiar height, you're not going to be quite able to slip one. What's that? It's the bees. They're off. Oh, quick then, quick, Evadne. We must go after them. Do something.
Very well. Grab the coal shovel and the poker, dear, and follow me. You bang, I'll shout.
Tang, tang, tangity-tang. Tang, tang, tangity-tang.
Beezy Weezy, come to mother. Beezy Weezy, come to mummy.
Tang, tang,
tangity-tang. Rest it easy, come on.
That was A Hive of Activity, a further extract from the random jottings of Hinge and Brackett, written by Gerald Proud. To assist Dr. Evadne Hinge and Dame Hilda Brackett, we welcome Jean Haywood as Maud. Our thanks also to this week's guest, Timothy Bateson, and to the members of the Stacton Trestle Music Appreciation Society for their contribution. Production was by John Dias.